Okay, yeah. Thank you. After our last agenda item, we were a little testy, but now we're getting, we had a quick snack and a few chips and a little mandarin, and so we're in good shape. Thank all of you for your patience. There's times when the executive officer tries to put together a timetable for us, and it never works. So
we try. Actually, I have to move right.
And I have to tell you, over my many, many years of regional board time, I don't get to get much swag, but I got this, and don't ask me where I got this.
What is it?
But I've had it for a hell of a long time, and I saw it up on my shelf, and I go, I got to bring that tomorrow, man. And you always wonder about trash and enforcement and everybody throwing things out the window. I have never seen anybody pulled over and given a citation for trash, you know. So anyway, don't trash California. So thank all of you for showing up, and we will get started with our workshop this afternoon. And Vice Chair Young has done an amazing job, along with Board Member McGrath, as an ad hoc committee to kind of pull this thing all together, and we're going to kind of turn it over to Vice Chair and let her handle it a little bit here, and then we'll see where we go, and you can give them some directions on what we do. Thank you.
All right, thank you. What we have planned for this afternoon primarily is to wrap up things that we were unable to do at the earlier workshop, and that would consist primarily of hearing the staff sort of summarize your thoughts and what we heard and make some additional points. We would also like to provide time for the board members to ask questions if we have questions remaining. And then we'll have a wrap-up conversation among the board members and with staff as appropriate. Just to summarize what we've heard and any suggestions about how we might want to proceed. Is that sound good to you?
A little lay of the land. This is a continuation of the workshop that...
Is your mic on?
Your mic is
not. Is it too loud or not loud enough?
It's not loud.
Your voice is loud. Are you hearing it?
No, it's not on the mic. I mean, your voice is loud.
I guess somebody needs to give me a different speaker because this is not...
That one's definitely on. Okay. At any rate, this is a continuation of the workshop that we initiated last month to consider how best to implement the trash load reduction requirements from the 2009 regional municipal stormwater permit. I reiterate that it's a workshop. This is not an action item. It's an information item. And last month, we heard a lot of commenters, including staff. So our recommendation today is to not continue the comment phase, but because we went long into the afternoon and did not have an opportunity to have the board either ask questions or make comments. That's generally the goal today. Once we're done today, we also want to make sure that both what was done last month, all of the comments, all the presentations, we're going to make sure that's posted on the website, becomes available, and likewise, transcript from today will be posted and made available. So we want to make sure that this is something that's productive moving forward and is information available to all. With that, Tom gave the staff comments last month, and I wanted to reiterate what we heard last month and do sort of a staff wrap-up.
Yeah, well, thank you, Bruce, and thank you, board members and audience. Well, I'm going to give just a brief recap and perhaps set the stage for the board to have dialogue with us. And let me make sure. Can I just reset one or is it two? Try two.
that the John Mueller Christmas tree?
So yeah. So
And Starbucks has never ever given me another cup of coffee.
And for the benefit of Board Member Abacopa, I thought it'd be helpful just to sort of reiterate some of the points, because reflecting on what you said, Board Member Young, the staff perspective is pretty much consistent with what I presented to GetGo, and I think reinforced by the testimony and comments by others. I mean that there are challenges and the like, but there's progress and there's opportunity. So I'll recap, and I think I'm not intending to advocate anything beyond what I've already illustrated before. So just to recap, what the permit requires. This was a slide I showed last time. We have the three-tier load reductions. First one, 40% in 2014, followed by 70% in 2017. And ultimately, we don't say 0% or 100%, we say no impact level. And then the permit also mandated a minimum amount of full trash capture equivalent to 30% of nominally retail area in most communities. And then there was a mandatory minimum amount of trash hotspots each community had to clean up, if you will, as mitigation for ongoing trash discharge. I added this one because I didn't illustrate it last time, in that what also was in the permit were three submittals that were due in February of 2012. A baseline trash load report, which was intended to establish the basis for those percent reductions, and along with that, a presentation of how trash reductions would be tracked, assessed, if you ever, and then individual short-term trash load reduction plans by all the permittees, primarily focusing in on the short-term 40% reduction effort. And these three reports were all intertwined. And as you may know, we staff responded after submittal of these with a letter to all permittees in May of 2012, raising concerns about a number of aspects of what was put forward, many of which related to the inherent challenge of limited data and a lot of variability in the data in terms of generating trash loads that we could use as a solid basis, and need to further expand upon that. The heart of the concerns was the reduction tracking method, because it was mostly founded on estimated credits without much basis, without validation that was going to be the basis of how things would be implemented, and how the short-term trash plans were all crafted were based on those estimates, which we questioned the concept as well as the specifics of those so-called credits for certain types of things. And basically we said, though, rather than go into the weeds of what we liked and didn't like about the load report and the trash reduction tracking method and the plans, we propose moving forward and let's work together and to come up with a way that will solve the problem. It's all about let's solve the problem. And we simply put, over the course of the next few months, we met with a steering committee of representative permittees from large, medium, small, complex, not so complex, at different levels. So we had a good representation to talk through how can we get this ship in the right direction. And the ultimate theme that we came to terms with is solve the problem by focusing in on where the problem is, focusing on the high trash generation areas, and that at least a starting point for performance-based approach would be implement full trash capture for those high trash generation areas, or a combination of controls that would be equivalent, recognizing full trash capture doesn't work everywhere. So that was the general theme. And then this evolved into this strategy with the focus on high trash generation areas. Let's first define where they are through a mapping exercise, defining high, medium, low generation areas. The permittees actually chose to add a fourth, which is very high, and based on land use demographics and other knowledge, a key part was start with the maps based on land use and then improve upon them with local knowledge, especially where, just because it's a land use areas that might have high trash generation, we might make sure it does. And then based on that, delineate these trash management areas, delineate your community into management areas that reflect those trash generation areas in a manner that works for them. And then identify, implement new or enhanced actions that would be implemented in those areas with a simple concept of change purple and red areas into ultimately green areas. Simple as that, right? But and then with the challenge of assess and verify effectiveness. So that's the strategy, and I think everybody still supports that strategy, and it's how to make it work. And one of the challenges that you've posed to us, and we have been challenged ourselves, is what are the assessment options? And we have this hierarchy of weight of evidence that we feel we can put into play, starting with implement controls with expected benefit, but verify, and consider on-land visuals of sorts. They're in strategic areas, either at the management area scale or more directly related to the source and activity scale. We can't be done everywhere at all times, so strategically there's option there. As back that up with observations in the water. And ideally, we will be able to, our toolbox will grow in terms of actually measuring flux and better quantification of load. So those concepts still are all on the table to be put in practice. And so we also told you that we expected progress down this new path to start being demonstrated in this past year's annual reports. And our review of the annual reports within that strategy revealed that everybody at least has the maps, and everybody has some level of delineated management areas. We've expressed that some of them may need improvement because may or may not, depending on how well they've been established. My observation is some of them appear to be way big to be effective tool for managing. There's too many things going on. Perhaps they can be reduced down. What's the sweet spot should be determined by each permittee, though. And then identify and implement significant new enhanced management areas in those high trash generation management areas. And it's a mixed bag to date in terms of what's been reported. It's understood that would be the case because this new approach came into play near the end of the fiscal year. And we were not in a position to modify or substantially change the annual report concept to better account for that. But it's a work in progress. And we also asked to tell us what type of assessment methods are in place or are planned. And very few actually were in a position to tell us that. We did state in our guidance for the annual report that if you can't tell us. Your plan to do that, and many folks said we intend to tell you when we submit the long-term plans, which are due this forthcoming February. So that's basically what we told you. And then the next steps, long-term plans coming up in February, applying this to going forward, but at the same time we want to apply this strategy to how we'll demonstrate, permittees can demonstrate attainment or progress towards attaining the 40% load reduction. And I think I got... Oh, I popped this in here just to tell you, I couldn't help but do this. Just the other day, I took this picture, and if you look, see if I can do this slow enough so you can see it. Went the wrong way? No, yes, I did wrong. Those lines, those are the wet spots from the street sweeper. This is short, it's so close after street sweeping that it's still wet. And this is not necessarily a diss on plastic bags or whatever, but it shows you just the challenge that we have, because otherwise the street looks pretty clean in terms of trash, street sweeping effectiveness, but that bag obviously got blown, it's the wind-blown nature. That's part of the problem. It's the bag showed up minutes after street sweeping, and that's the nature of the beast, that there's no perfect solution. It was a photo op I couldn't resist. And then and I ended up last time explaining this as far as our expectation, staff expectation for demonstrating the 40% trash load reduction is back to verifying what actions you've taken, in particular verifying where full trash capture has been implemented, because I think we've heard that a substantial amount of flow trash capture actually has been implemented. And so that's more than semi-quantitative or quantitative in itself. What percentage of the high trash generation areas or management areas now are covered by flow trash capture? That's a metric that we can recognize. Then otherwise, at least, what are the other things that you've done? And then what observations have you been made to demonstrate that those other actions are effective? So that's my recap, and I don't want to understate what all the other participants stated, but in a general sense, after my presentation, we heard a report on the full trash capture demonstration project, which I sort of just alluded to, and that a substantial amount of full trash capture has been implemented. Where full evaluation of the effectiveness of them is still somewhat a work in progress, but within the constraints and resources available for that project, it was deemed a very great success, and we know that they work under certain circumstances. And then we had testimony from Save the Bay and Clean Water Action regarding expedite the process, solve the problems, focus, also consider sources. We want measurable outcomes. We heard from industry expressing concerns about how things are measured and concern about how methods used in their own interests, expressing concern about whether ordinances and bans are the right approach relative to some of the sources of trash we're concerned about. And then what we end up with is a series of presentations from some of the municipalities demonstrating their commitment, their ownership of the problem and the solution, and demonstration of some success stories or works in progress leading to our success that was really quite impressive, and it set the stage for there is a can-do attitude out there, but there's still a big challenge ahead. So we're looking basically now that you've heard our perspective and you heard all the other perspective. Does this work for you?
It all depends if you're city representative or other.
Right. I guess I should have said at the outset, and I was remiss, that we really appreciated all the testimony that we heard last month. It was very informative, even in cases where we had read of what people were doing, it really helped to come up and have the presentations, and we really appreciate your time and effort in doing that. And we could probably pull our lights back in so that we could all see. So that's,
staff to do this.
First and foremost, for those of you who were not here, we got a little rushed getting in our time slot towards the end, which is kind of an understatement. And so we stopped having the kind of question and answer from the board members and among board staff and presenters that we would have sort of liked to have in a more workshop sort of group problem-solving atmosphere. So what we wanted to take the time to do a little bit right now is to provide the board members with the opportunity to ask questions, probably primarily from staff, but also from any of the presenters, if there are things that you would like to have clarified or points that you would like to make. I should say that I'm not sure that everyone knows this, but all of the board members received a full transcript of everyone's testimony from last month, so we have that to refer to, which is very useful. So with that, Mr. Kissinger.
I'll hold off for the time being.
All right. Mr. McGrath.
If we're looking at just questions here, I did come up with two, and I don't think they have to be answered today, but I think we need to look at this as a process going forward. And so these are kind of technical questions that are important if we think about this in a total quality management type of effort, where we're going to do our best, we're going to kind of assess how well we're doing both in terms of the cleanup efforts and in terms of how are we regulating this smartly, and then make the adjustments. So there are two things that kind of have been persistent technical questions that I think we need to at least narrow the bounds with the staff's assessment of what's the best scientific information out there. And the first is, how much of the waste problem is food wrappers? We heard some very different estimates. I think I heard 70% from one testimony and 48% from another, and having to do with fast food. What does the number look like from the staff's perspective? How much error band is there around it? Because obviously we should be working on the most important things, and that doesn't define the question of whether or not we should be preventing or capturing after litter, but what are the real sources? The second thing, and this goes back to way before I was appointed to the board, and that's, how effective is street sweeping? And as you know, some former staff members here have raised interesting technical challenges about how much of our resources should go into street sweeping. And that has to do both with trash, which is the current element, but also some of the other aspects of what we're regulating. And we do want to find a sweet spot. So those are the two technical questions that I don't want to see answered today, but anticipating that we're going to have a re-issuance and progress, I want to get those nailed down a little better down the way. So those are my only two questions.
Mike's on.
Okay. Yeah, a couple things that you inspired me to kind of answer your question, but raise another couple points, especially on the street sweeping aspect of things. One thing, if you recall that picture, there were no cars parked there. So that's a key part of an effective street sweeping program, is get to the curb. And I know, I'll point out, that was in Oakland. And Oakland has had an aggressive street sweeping parking program for quite some time, and it works because it only takes one ticket usually to keep people from doing it again. So they got to the curb. You didn't see any other trash. You did see a pretty rough street, though, if you look closely. And that means you can pick up trash, but you're not going to get fine particles because of the problem of a non-smooth street. So that's the effectiveness of street sweeping for fine particle-bound pollutants is a lot different than the effectiveness of street sweeping for trash. And I think trash, I like your question, Board Member Graf, because I think we ought to be able to have a reasonable, the semi-quantitative value of how street sweeping works. The other aspect of that is, by calling it, I mentioned it, but didn't emphasize that plastic bag was windblown, and that plastic bag sitting in that curb, that's not going to get swept again for, I believe, maybe it's a week. I forget what the sweeping frequency is there, but downwind, if not down gradient of that street, is Lake Merritt. So more than likely that bag is in Lake Merritt through a wind-blown pathway.
Unless Dr. John walked by. I mean, Farmer John walked by.
Way back to perhaps some good citizen picked it up, because there is some buffer between the street and the lake, and that helps. But that's the issue, is that to solve the problem, we have to address not only just what gets into and discharges out of the storm drain system. We have to deal with the windblown pathway, which is actually can be facilitated by the storm drain system, recognizing that the street curbs tend to be, the gutters are part of the system. And then compounded by direct dumping is another aspect that needs to be taken into consideration. But as a Bay Area community, we have to consider all pathways and not just distinguish the MS4 pathway, although we're driving this by the MS4 requirements. If we don't consider those other aspects of things, the MS4 requirements are, clearly fail. So I just want to make sure that's in our heads. Thank you.
So I'll just offer a couple comments and then maybe a quick question. One of the comments, we're so privileged and fortunate in the Bay Area to have huge acreage of open space and open space districts and trusts and families and whatever. There's a lot of properties out there that are open space, and there's trash on those also, unfortunately. Hopefully there should not be, because people that are using open space would have a better sense of the environment than not, but it is out there. So to me, that is kind of a concern for us, kind of urban rural areas, whether it's Mountain View with the skyline to the west of them, or us with the ocean or whatever, west and east out there, for the large parcels that are open space. And the other part that it's more of a question is in the enforcement part, you know, what if municipalities cannot get to the 40%, you know? Will there be penalties coming forward, mandatory MMPs, or strictly a board hearing of enforcement? Just kind of a general question that kind of need to look at. And
the one part of that question that I can answer, because the issue of what will we consider enforcement?
That's only
discretionary enforcement is in play. There is no mandatory enforcement in this circumstance. So the reduction requirements don't qualify as requirements that are subject to the mandatory minimum penalty aspect. So enforcement is strictly discretionary. In other words, weigh the evidence and determine whether it's needed or not. Or so, if anybody had concern about that, I want to clarify that for the record.
Yeah, Margaret, I know you've been reading, just dutifully reading the transcript. Do you have any questions so far?
Yes. Yes, you know, I come from a municipality, and I'm trying to imagine how this is all going to play out. And I was pleased to see that a lot of the testimony that happened were from cities in my part of the world. And I'm actually very proud of a lot of we've banded together as a cities association to, you know, try to work on these issues regionally. And so the single-use ban issue is something that we've worked on. But a lot of it, I think, you know, bottom line has to do with the resources available within our municipalities. And whether it be just city resources, you know, funds to implement the full capture, the equipment that's necessary, or the political will to mandate these, and some, you know, it's like, bottom line, who's going to pay for this, right? Is it the cities? And it's great if the cities can afford to do so, and also if there's a political will to do so, and maybe, you know, it may have to come down to assessing the residents to whether it's garbage contracts that we renegotiate to, you know, have these requirements. And so that's my concern, is that given the state of where, you know, municipalities are, and, you know, things are definitely better now, but we're all on a different levels. And so it goes back to the chair's question of, you know, what happens if some places aren't able to do this. You know, is there assistance? And, you know, we always talk about, complain about mandates without any resources. And that's the concern I have with this as well, is that I think, you know, even if we're well-intentioned, if we don't have the resources to make this happen, you know, how are we going to be able to help those who need help to get there? And that's ultimately the bottom line, at least for me.
I don't think that was a question.
It's something to think about.
But if you guys want to respond to it, you're welcome.
Well, I'll ask a question. So what's the answer? What's the resolution to that issue?
Well,
it is actually a serious question because it's really what we're dealing with on the ground right now. And this is expensive, and we just raised our garbage rates, and every time we do that, we get complaints. And so, and honestly, the public, I'll say I don't know how many people are really aware that we have this 40% mandate coming down next year. How do you... part of it is education, too, to the public at large, that this is an issue and we have to deal with it, like it or not. But then there's the politics with that. So, I would like to hear if folks and their, suggestions and their answers to that question.
Let's let Jim go ahead. Certainly I was disappointed in what we've seen, and I'm pretty sure that Dr. Young's going to talk about what we need to have in terms of baseline and the like. But when it gets down to the question of what do you do and what's reasonable and is there a reasonable good faith effort, I think there's a couple stages. The first thing is we need to understand the problem, and we need to kind of take the same approach that we did in establishing the high trash load areas and say, okay, so we've got a body of data that says these are high trash load areas, hot spots, and we need to track that through then into the kind of the reasoning and analytical process of what's contributing to those and what are the underlying land uses. And then what are the possible world of solutions? Prevention, full capture, equivalent. But at the end of the day, when you look at municipal finance and bringing the tools to bear, there needs to be an understanding of what it would cost. But you need to do the analytical work. And then you need to do the other part of it, which I'm going to want from local governments, which is some assessment of what they're already doing and whether or not it's cost effective. And I can give a couple examples. Berkeley sweeps its downtown pretty frequently, sometimes daily. Is that the best way to use resources to solve this problem, or should you strategically approach it? Any kind of solution needs to kind of not be doing the same old things over and over again, but looking at what you're doing and looking at this new requirement and saying, okay, where does that fit within the priority system? What else can be adjusted? Tom gave a great example. You can sweep streets, but if there's no direction to the police department to make sure that those streets are swept, and there's no fine system that assures that people will get their cars out of the way so they really are swept, then it's not going to be very effective. If Public Works keeps maintaining the drop structures like they always do and doesn't think, a full trash capture device could save us in maintenance costs, because all of a sudden we're not going to have to go out in the middle of a storm because three of our storm drains that plug up every storm are overflowing again because we've got a trash capture device upstream. And it's not happening anymore. You might have to drop some things, but in terms of what you're doing in your overall public work system, this has to be integrated into your public work system because that's where the governance happens and where it meets the road. You also need to think about the educational part of it, the land use planning. We're going to designate an area for high trash potential. There should be some kind of condition. It should be not in a new area where we don't have any trash capture devices, but it should be in an area where we are planning trash capture devices and we're figuring out ways to get there. So it is really a matter, and to some degree, of integrating what you're already doing, seeing where this fits in the priority system. I've got a lot more sympathy for a local government that's done that work, gone to the voters with a 218 and fails, but has well articulated what's needed. Then they can come in and argue that it's that they've got some feasibility problems, and I'm a little sympathetic. But to just say we're going to keep doing the same things we're always doing, and we're just going to have consultants kind of over the top tell us. No, I mean, it's really got to go into the structural and intellectual framework of how a city governs.
I'll offer my answer to that question. Staff is looking at us like, won't they ever stop talking about this? No.
We want to talk. More than we do.
They do. You know, taking a step back for just a moment, when we come in here every month as board members, we are faced with a series of issues where water quality has to be protected. It's our job to protect water quality, and we want to. And it's going to cost somebody some money. And I can't think of an issue that we've dealt with that hasn't fallen into that category. And what we always say is that, yes, we are focused on protecting water quality and cleaning it up where it needs to be cleaned up, but we want to do it in the most practical and cost-effective way possible for the people who are the regulated entities. And we did that just this morning with the grazing waiver. Just to give a couple of you a little bit of background on where we started with this permit, a little history. The first time we had a draft proposal for dealing with trash in the municipal regional permit, there was a long list of BMPs, basically. And the cities came back. I think we maybe had like 72 people testifying that day, mostly from the cities. And they said, do not be prescriptive. Mm-hmm. Don't do the BMP route. Let us decide what to do, because we have people on the ground. We're all different. We know which actions are going to be effective in which areas. We also had a number of legislators weigh in, a very large number, which I don't remember at the moment. Assembly and supervisors, telling us specifically they wanted to have us adopt requirements that would require measurable decreases in trash. And that was the catchphrase that they repeated over and over and over again. Don't just tell the cities to go out and do good work. We want measurable decreases. We want numbers. We want numbers in the requirements. Meanwhile, the State Water Resources Control Board is always in the background telling us, don't measure outputs, measure outcomes. Meaning, in this case, don't measure what people are trying to do. Measure the trash that's getting into the state's waters, because that's what we really want to be controlling, and that's what we want to be measuring. And so we took all that in, and we said, okay. And we adopted a system that we thought was going to accomplish all of those things. And, Jim, you'll remember all this well, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or add to it. But that's how we came up with a system where we said, cities, we're going to give you total flexibility in whatever it is that you want to do to address your problems. But we are going to adopt these requirements for a percentage decrease from baseline. Basically, we're going to put you on a timeline where we want you to average about a 10% reduction in trash each year. So after 4 years, we want a 40% reduction, 7 years, a 70%, and then we let it slip a little, say 11 years. We said 100%, but what we mean is no impact or de minimis or, you know, try to get to zero, but it's as close as anybody can get. That was the genesis of what we were trying to do. But the only way that we can hold people accountable is to have some kind of a measurement system that goes out like the state board's telling us to and measures in the waters or on the streets before it gets to the waters what's out there. So we have to have some way of figuring out whether the cities are doing are meeting the goals that we set out, because we expressly did not adopt BMPs. And I know for all of you in the audience, you've lived through this, you know, for many years, so this is all boring, but we have some new board members here that weren't part of that process, and I think it's real important to acknowledge that that's where we came from. That kind of a system where we let the cities match their own cleanup techniques to their own problems and do it on an area-by-area basis should, in theory, be the most cost-effective way to solve the problem, because you're taking the best thing for every single, you know, site-specific location, and you're doing it there. I'm not sure that I could think of a more cost-effective way to go about it. A problem that we have run into was some confusion, I think, which hopefully by the end of today we will clarify a little bit about exactly what this on-the-ground outcome monitoring system had to look like and how precise it had to be. So Jim's warming up to the microphone over there.
Well, you know, I live in Berkeley, and I've drilled down because it's the city I live in, because I know the public works director, and I try to think of these things in systems. All the trash that arrives in our waterways, most of it, the bulk of it, arrives through some element of a municipal stormwater drain system. And it is the public works department that manage those things. You know, in the city of Berkeley, to just give you a couple of numbers and the problems, they have a clean water fee that's been in place that generates over $2 million a year for clean stormwater. It's not all clean water purposes. It's clean stormwater. The public works director has about $200,000 worth of discretion a year. So it's not being used for things that are logically, that anyone has sat down and said, here's the public works manual. Maybe we don't need to sweep every week. Maybe we need to sweep every day right before the rainy season. Maybe we need to look at the capital cost of sweeping and cleaning out our storm drains and say, can we invest in some capital facilities that would reduce those costs? So if I've got a municipal government that says, okay, we've looked at our public works system and we've got a $60 million system and we've got about this $3 million that does these kinds of maintenance activities, and if we tweak it a little bit, we think we can get a better performance. We can just do more important things in terms of priorities. And if we get another $2 million a year, we can start to build full capture devices or alternatives. And they've looked at the system and they've gone to the voters, and the voters told them no in a 218 election. That tells us one kind of things. But for somebody to walk in here and they don't have a public works manual, there's no procedures manual, or they haven't looked at it, or they haven't made a single change, you know how sympathetic I'm going to be? Not. I mean, you have to integrate this into what you're doing and saying, okay, maybe I can't get any more resources, but maybe I can use the resources I have more wisely. Not with the perspective of trying to keep the storm drains from overflowing, but trying to keep trash out of the storm drains, maybe so they don't overflow. It would be a powerful argument to walk in here and say, you know, we really tried. The city council unanimously adopted a proposal, sent it to the citizens, and they, you know, it failed with a 62% vote. Try again. We'll give you a little more time. But if we go, well, we didn't know what to try. I mean, that's what I mean by there are institutions in every local government that do this work. And how could they do it maybe a little wiser?
I'd like to just add one more little thing here. I've been thinking about it because we've been working on it. A lot of us in the Bay Area don't really have a very good storm drain system, number one. Unfortunately, we're not San Francisco or other cities. But let's just take the coastside. We have ditches And I mentioned to the staff earlier that we have a big permitting process with the Coastal Commission just to clean our ditches, let alone go in there and dig trash out of the ditches. So, because when you're not cleaning the ditches, then there's more trash buildup in there that's hidden under roots and willows that's collapsed down in there. And so this is something we are going to have to work on with the other agencies, the regulatory agencies, and say, look, you know what I mean? We're working 2 years to get these ditches clean, and, you know, unfortunately, we haven't had huge storms, but we better get them. And what the heck's going to happen then? There'll be more trash in there. And so that would be penalized against our city to do that. But we have to figure out a way to manage that, and it's got to be done. And I've highlighted that here to remind fellow council members 2014's coming pretty quick here. So how do we get in there and make sure that storm drain system is working properly and clean?
Well, I think I appreciate you both bringing up the realities of costs in the cities, and I think we will continue to keep that as a consideration. I know we will, front and center. But since one of the objectives of this workshop is to provide clarity for people in the audience, I have some questions that I would like to ask of staff that follow up on some of the information that we heard in the presentations last time. If that's okay with everybody. I have five. You can count them. The first couple are a little bit long. But the first one, Dr. Mumley referred to a little bit earlier, but I just really want to make sure everybody is on the same wavelength on this one. There was a very useful slide that was put up by Chris Summers of EOA last time. It was his third slide. And it was a graphic that was not complicated. It showed three pathways by which trash can enter surface waters or waters of the state. There was a box for stormwater, there was a box for wind, and there was a box for direct dumping. And it was good that he highlighted this issue because I think it's very important. The fact that he is correct, that there is more than one pathway, and that all trash doesn't enter surface waters from cities always via stormwater, raises the issue of, well, are we going to try to monitor and separate what comes from stormwater versus what comes from other things, other pathways? And I would like to say right now, no. that it's my intention, and I believe it's staff's intention, and Tom just talked about this, that what we want to have is to have the cities start to decrease the trash load from all of those pathways, all three of those pathways, and any more that ought to be out there, on basically the same timeline, so that you should anticipate that the regional board, through one mechanism or another, will be at least, you know, considering with the votes of the rest of the board, having the cities be responsible for windblown trash, for direct dumping, for homeless encampments, that sort of thing, on the same timeline as stormwater, because it doesn't make any sense at all to consider them as separate problems. It's the same problem. We just happened to address it first via our stormwater permit. And I'm actually just restating what Tom said about 10 minutes ago. But I wanted to make sure that everyone was clear on that. And to their credit, I didn't hear a single city say, well, we're not going to worry about that because that one was a homeless encampment or that one was windblown. I think all the cities are already on this wavelength. And particularly, Renta Perkins from Walnut Creek gave a really nice overview about the work that they've been doing that really primarily focused on illegal dumping and homeless encampments, and it seemed like it was very effective in solving or addressing the trash problem. And we want to say, yeah, go ahead. That counts. We're going to count that as part of your program. We're not worried whether how much of it happened to come through stormwater. My question for staff is whether or not you would like to expand on what I just said, but also whether perhaps, Bruce, for the edification of all of us board members, you might just briefly list the other types of regulatory mechanisms we have available if we find it necessary to look at some of these other pathways separately. Was I clear on that question? Our expectation is that the cities are going to take care of all the pathways at once, but should that not happen in a couple of instances, we have other tools in our toolbox, and I thought maybe Bruce could...
Well, the recognize the nexus we have here is the permit specifies overseeing the discharge of stormwater from municipal separate systems. And so really our nexus, as I say, is under the Clean Water Act and the Water Code, is a discharge activity. So there would, since this is specific to stormwater, we could look at all sources. And to a certain degree, I know that while this permit names the municipalities and associated entities, there's also a statewide permit on Caltrans. And we've commonly heard issues over the fact that there are Caltrans, freeways, highways that go through cities, that there obviously is a lot of windblown trash there. Is Caltrans doing enough? And that's certainly another area that we constantly push. We do, even though it's a statewide permit, we do work with Caltrans on implementing that within our region. Some of the other activities, it starts to get a little more challenging. There may be some activities that we might say tie into a stream maintenance nexus through, say, the flood control district. Unfortunately, not all of the flood control districts are party to this specific permit. We do have permits on the flood control districts. It sounds like that would be something helpful for Half Moon Bay for their ditches. Other activities we could look at would basically try to build that nexus. Where is there a discharge that we have a responsible party, and that party should be controlling that discharge? And certainly when you get into homeless encampments and such, that starts to get to be a challenge of should we look at where those homeless encampments are as the owner is responsible, or should we look at this as a broader city responsibility? So those are challenges, and we know especially in the homeless issue this has been a broad challenge because it's not only the trash generated by homeless areas, obviously it's many other issues that the municipalities are wrestling with there, but to a certain degree raising the profile of the trash generation may help the cities recognize that they do need to be proactive in whatever means they take to control that. The windblown, again, is obviously a challenge, but again, it gets to the basic heart of trash generation, that if you have areas that are high generators of trash, that if you have trash cans that are overflowing, yes, you're going to have windblown trash. And so to a certain degree, you could say windblown really is not necessarily all that much different from stormwater generated.
And in cases where, for example, we have already identified particular locations and put them on the 303D list for trash, we have TMDLs available?
Well, and that's actually one of our goals with this whole program through the municipal permit, is that we don't have to take the step to TMDLs. At this point, the only water body that's expressly named for trash is Lake Merritt here in Oakland. And
No, no.
We have water bodies throughout the region.
We adopted a bunch of them.
We went ahead and named the 26 rather than put them on the so-called watch list. Okay. Right. So, and the idea is that we recognize that probably all of the water bodies within our region could be named. We don't want to have to do that. And so by implementing this permit and any other measures readily available, we don't have to go through the full TMDL process and deal with things like we did this morning on the grazing waiver.
And that's an important point. So I think the message is let's just go ahead and get the job done, not worry excessively about what particular regulatory handle we're using, because we have others available. But if we don't have to go through the trouble of doing TMDLs, for example, or other kinds of processes, it's going to save everybody time and money. So there we are. Second question. I think are at least two interpretations out there on what the performance standard of full trash capture means. Dr. Mumley put up his slides again today about which stated, I think, that we are wanting the high trash generation areas to meet a standard that we're calling a performance standard for full trash capture, which means you can put in full trash capture, or if you don't want to, if you have a more efficient way of going about solving the problem, you can combine any number of activities you want as long as you get the same results as full trash capture. And the measure of whether you've done it effectively is these assessments that Dr. Mumley was referring to, visual assessments on land, visual assessments in the water, and you had a number of photo points, and you, it's on the slide. When I listened to Chris Summers' description from EOA, and I'll just say for the transcript that it was on slides 11, 12, and 14. He was talking about doing full trash capture equivalent studies, and that's a quote, that would develop performance standards for combinations of control methods. And I don't think I was misinterpreting it, but what I think he was saying was that he was proposing, and as part of the big grant that they've just gotten, Prop 84 grant, is going to study combinations of methods that generally do the same thing as full trash capture, so that people could have the benefit of somebody having done a study. That is not what we mean in our permit. It may be useful for Prop 84 and for education of other people in other parts of the state and other parts of the country and the world, for that matter. We're not interested in certifying combinations of activities as being equivalent to full trash capture. We want you, the cities, to go out and figure out in each particular place where you're trying to solve the problem, what you think right there, right then, is going to be as effective as full trash capture. And so for the purpose of clarity, we don't want people to go down dead ends and spend a lot of time and money doing things that are not what we mean. So I really wanted to draw the distinction between what the Prop 84 grant is talking about in terms of performance standards for combinations of control measures, because that's different from what we mean by using a performance standard of full trash capture, because what we're going to be doing is using the assessment methods to measure in the field in every particular place, whether or not you've come up with a combination of methods that works for you right there. So similar words, fundamentally different concepts. And I, not to beat a dead horse, but we want you to have the full range of combinations available to you. We don't want somebody to give you a list of things that you can use that are equivalent to full trash capture. We want you to take, you know, look at all 10 or 12 things that you could do in any particular location at any particular time. Pick the ones that you think are going to be the most effective and the combinations that you think are going to be the most effective. And there was a question in here somewhere. but, yes, thank you. I guess my question is, did I interpret your slide correctly, Dr. Mumley?
Yes. I mean, your perspective, share, and we have been communicating that. I do understand that there is a degree of interest on the part of the municipalities to build their toolbox of options. And we've said even earlier that to the extent that you want to put some value to an action that helps you build your efforts, fine, but that we're not in a position to actually endorse those values, whatever. But what I was thinking of, Board Member Young, while you were talking, was the presentation from Kirsten Struth from Palo Alto illustrating what they've done in their University Avenue management area. And she described a combination of things that they are doing in that area. It was a combination, right? And then she showed observations of what? No trash observed. And so that's sort of where we're going.
That's what we want.
And you know, that where that formula that Palo Alto used in University Avenue is applicable elsewhere, that's a rhetorical question. Because like, okay, what are the things that Palo Alto did that was successful that are repeatable elsewhere? Or is it unique just to that situation, but I think there was lots of lessons learned there. So we love the idea of plagiarizing success, if that's the right, that term makes sense. But you know, or I mean, you know, duplicating success, but we don't want it to be sort of this overly simplistic, which actually would be too simple approach to saying, well, I'm from this pick list, I'm doing these three combos because I've been told they would work for me. You have to demonstrate they work for you. And again, I've been expressing interest in a dialogue I've had with the municipalities, is that to solve the problem, you got to understand where it's, you know, what's the cause. And so in order to pick your solutions, you have to have, you know, you have to kind of understanding of what are the activities or sources of it, you know, that are causing it, and then what are the practices that best relate to those types of activities and sources, and that, implement that one or combination of ones that affect those. Part of the challenge with these management areas is that they're not just one unique homogeneous system, area. There's all these nuances that require variations on the theme. So I believe, I'm hoping that the players behind me are nodding reasonably, at least they
positive. Nodding,
so
nodding,
that is their intent.
In agreement.
They're a blank slate.
Because I hear you, and back to a long answer to your question, the short answer that I started with is yes, we staff agrees with your perspective that.
Just to show you what a math nerd I used to be and still am, you know, if you went out to if you have 10 possible actions to throw at any particular problem, which you've got at least 10, then there are 627 different combinations of 2, 3, 4, or 5 actions. So I don't think you want to spend the time and the money to look at all 627 combinations of things to figure out which ones measure up. I think you just want to go out and do it. And that assumes that it doesn't matter which order you apply them in, because otherwise it would be a permutation and the number would be way bigger, right? Okay. Moving on. Three quick ones.
You can tell people understand statistics. They had to get a PhD.
That was just math. Basic math. Again, because we're trying to decrease everyone's costs by being really clear about what we want, there were a couple of people who were presenters who asked questions about what counts in this weight of evidence approach and what doesn't. And I think we should answer that question directly and clearly today. I'll give you some examples. Lynn Scarpa of Richmond described an enforcement-based program, basically, that they have been doing, that they have found they found to be effective. And she basically asked us, you know, does this count? My answer would be yes. Renta Perkins of Walnut Creek, I mentioned before, describing cleanups of illegal dumping. Again, I would say yes. The basic rule of thumb would be, you know, if it helps to solve the problem, it counts. But staff, do you have any more to add to that, or any help you can give to people to assure them that what they're doing is not going to be wasted effort?
Well, this kind of goes back to your previous statement question. We did tell them that we would give them some feedback on what we consider significant actions that if they implement those within high trash generation areas, they'd be making significant progress towards the 40% reduction target, for instance. So whatever you want to call it, I think we are blessing certain combinations of actions where it's not. See, we still don't have a standard for how much assessment is enough, mm-hmm. how much, you know, demonstration that we've cleaned up this area is adequate. It may be that that amount of effort that it takes could be applied to just doing the actions in some communities. So I think we have to leave ourselves as regulators some room to say, and in fact, on some of the slides you saw there, that one of the first assessment methods is tell us what you're actually doing and verify that you really did it. And if it's an action that we have looked at ahead of time and said, that impresses us, that's a significant action, which is what you're doing right now, then I think we should be able to say, maybe it's not full trash equivalence, maybe we're not judging exactly how well it's working and how it must be done to really be effective. We still want assessment data, but we can say, okay, you're doing this. If somebody comes in and says, well, I've just been attacking uncovered trash loads in my town, and that's taking care of the whole problem, I'm going to say, no, sorry, it's not working. But if they say, but Board Member Young said whatever we want to do, we can do, and we should be fine, then I'm really going to want to see the assessment data in that situation. And that sets a really higher bar for the assessment data in that. So I've been kind of rambling, but
No. I appreciate your description. And yes, I think what I said was if it helps to solve the problem, it can be considered as part of your program, and it counts as part of a program. But we do still want the assessment data. And I'm going to circle back to that question of assessment later on.
I want to add one thing to what Dale said, and I'm talking in part to the municipalities right now, is back to this, the concept of owning the problem and the solution. So it's in their interest, more than ours, to pick actions that will work. Right. Because it's actions, it's either redirecting existing resources or applying rare additional resources to do something. So everybody wants that to succeed. So one should be picking actions based on some degree of confidence that that's the type of action that should solve that problem. And that's where, as we get more experience, and it's like Lynn Scarpa was addressing some of their direct dumping hotspots and taking action there, that made sense. She was taking on the source of the problem directly.
Now, so what we want to avoid is blind implementation, and just because I'm implementing something, I should be given credit for doing it. There has to be a basis for why you selected that, because you shouldn't be doing it if you don't have a basis. So we should be pretty straightforward for municipalities, though, to identify these are the actions we've just chosen to take in these management areas because these are the sources and activities of concern there, and there's a nexus between these actions and those activities, either through quantitative or semi-quantitative work or works in progress. So at least there's always some connection to a value of an action that's more than just off the shelf.
And to well complete that loop, because it goes back to an earlier point, we don't certify items, but someone, based upon the literature and the knowledge of their city, selects something that they think will work, and then they do the assessment that shows how effective, how right or wrong they were. That's the loop.
Yes, although we don't want to get hung up making the assessments into science projects all the time. If there's less trash, it has done something. Let me ask then about acceptable monitoring methods, because that was one of the things that Baykeeper, among other people, talked about. I think what Baykeeper suggested was the regional board should just basically set out a methodology that everybody can use and cut to the chase, basically, and that our 2005 rapid assessment method and using some transects of those might be good enough. And it may come to that. But at the moment, what we have is a requirement for people for the cities to go out and do assessment, and there are several options, as I understand it, on the table that they can use, and they were referred to in the slide that you put up earlier, Tom. It seems to me like we have lost a lot of time in the implementation of this permit with people going around in circles about, you know, what's good enough monitoring, what's not good enough monitoring, what's the precision have to be, what's the accuracy have to be. Where we're at right now is that we're trying to get a real basic picture, and we want you. We've said that in the February 2014 submissions, we want to have proposals for what kinds of methods are going to be used for these assessments, and by, is it June or July 2014? End of June 2014. Before the beginning of July 2014, we're going to want to have some of those measurements. We're going to want to have some of the data. But it's incumbent upon us, I think, immediately to be able to provide clear feedback to you, the cities, about what assessment methods are good enough and which ones aren't. We've got our own 2005 methodology, which I think, Tom, at one point we were talking offline, and you said, gee, that could even be simplified, and you had some ideas on how to do it. We've got the methodology that was presented in the slides that EOA put up. There are, which were called visual assessments. We've also can mine the results of cleanups that have been done and full trash capture data. In the future, we can even look at the apps that are available for smartphones for people to kind of check up on other things. Where we are at right now is that we don't want you, the cities, to be confused at all about which assessment methods are good enough and which ones aren't. And if you have any confusion or you're not sure whether what you're planning to use is going to be acceptable, we want you to call us. Actually, don't call me. Call them. But we don't want to waste any more time on that, because there are lots of affordable assessment methods out there that we are going to be perfectly happy with, and we just want you to go out and start doing them. Again, do you have any, do you, the staff have, do you want to expand on that point now, or do you want to do that with the cities when you meet with them later on?
The assessment methods are all brand new. There really wasn't much effort put in this direction earlier on because there was more of a credit kind of approach being moved on. And so very few of the cities have much experience at all using the assessment methods. So it's going to be a very steep learning curve. And they probably know more about them than we do at this stage.
Okay. I appreciate that that description. I would not like want the audience, however, to think that there weren't assessment methods before 6 months ago, because we published one in 2005. There have been a lot that have been around a long time. People just didn't start using them until very recently. So, yeah, it's a steep learning curve, but there we are.
In the absence of more sophisticated standard assessment methods, there are simple techniques that we can implement, and by implementing get information that would help us build simple, robust, repeatable techniques, and that's making consistent observations in strategic locations that we know represent what goes on in a given area. And it becomes pretty obvious that if you see areas where trash builds up, there's a good place to observe whether actions are resulting in less trash building up. I mean, there are variations of that kind of methodology that have been exercised in the past, but simple is better if it can be implemented at this point.
Right.
Back to the community taking ownership of doing something that it feels is worthwhile. Because how does one decide what actions to take if we don't have some observation to tell you that's where my problem's coming from? So that's why I'm going to take that kind of action, so I can then observe whether the basis of selecting the action was true. So I believe it's a balance between how as we strive working with the communities and them amongst themselves to come up with methods that are consistent and useful, and to do it by action. And I know there's often a fear of a regulated entity to commit to doing something that hasn't been endorsed, but I think this is a circumstance that do something that works for you, and we'll stay out of the way. But if you, as you suggested, if they want our help, to the degree we can, give them a thumbs up. For now, that seems to me something that would work. We're there, but I think let's go out there and collect trash observations.
Okay, excellent. I have two quick ones. They were particular things that the presenters asked, and I just want to make sure we circle back to them. Paul Singarella asked whether we are still considering the crediting scheme that was presented, I think, last year or maybe the year before. Yes or no? No.
No. The short answer.
All right. I just wanted to make sure that we were on the transcript saying that, because the fact that he raised the question, I think, meant that some people at least didn't hear that message clearly.
And we've told municipalities that you can't say that we've endorsed any particular credit. But you can say if you can have evidence that indicates that a particular action has expected benefit, go for it. But it's not been endorsed by the board, and do not say the board has endorsed it. And I think everybody understands that.
All right. Thank you. And then the last one, Craig Johns, who was the very last speaker at the last workshop, and more power to him, asked if we were thinking about standards for maintenance of full trash capture devices. And I wanted to give you, the staff, the opportunity to either answer that now or not answer it now.
Dale, weigh in if you want, because you get more hands-on than me. But the answer, again, the simple answer is yes, because they must be, and it depends, and it's relative to the type of device. But particularly the insert devices are only as good as they're maintained, and so that was one of the goals of the full trash capture demonstration project, is to get some insight to that. And it's a given that it's going to take more time to fully understand the right level and perhaps type of maintenance, maybe. But that's a challenge that we need to maintain, because we want to not fool ourselves, because we put some contraption in, we've solved the problem, and it could actually be backfire if it's not maintained. It could end up building up and bursting, kind of probably exasperate the problem.
Yeah, and Los Angeles in its TMDL did have specific requirements for what types of rainfall would trigger certain numbers of cleanouts, and we've not done that yet.
I think it's more dependent on how much trash is actually in the device. If you have, say, more than about 50% of the reservoir of trash filled with trash, then you're bordering on a situation where that device is possibly not going to be functional next storm. So it's really a matter of how much of the reservoir of trash that the device has been filled with trash. And I would say that off the top of my head, 50% is already the point where you're running into problems. So we want to see full trash capture devices with at least 50% of their trash capacity available, and probably more than that. So if we come upon a device that is full of trash, the reservoir of trash is completely full to the brim, then it's bypassing trash into the storm drain system. So it's not functioning. It's no longer a full trash capture device. It's a trash pass-through device. So I would say that a quick and easy standard would be no more than half of the capacity should be full at any time. And I would say that's, if you want to be safe, you should have more than a half of capacity.
Okay, so that's a rule of thumb people can go home with.
And I just add that I'd say in my rapidly approaching 40 years of water quality regulation that maintenance is one of the biggest issues in the success at controlling water quality and pollution, and that this is a key area that I think there are opportunities for cities to consider how to include maintenance and removal of the material in their capture devices can be tied into, say, a solid waste contract, and that might be something that might be more efficient than relying on public works staff to do that regular work.
And that would be a very interesting thing for us to hear about, whether any of you folks out there in the audience have, at a future date, have been able to follow up on that idea and come up with something that helped you out. Do you want to go back and have a second shot at questions, Bill?
I don't think so. I think it's a noble aspiration that we're working towards here. I think the devil's in the details. How, at the end of 2014, and looking at whether municipalities have accomplished a 40% reduction with the absence of having a baseline, is going to be a challenge. And I presume what's ultimately going to happen is it's only the cities, to the extent there are any, that just haven't done anything. If that's what's going to happen, that'll be singled out. I don't know how we identify 40% reduction when we don't know where we're starting from. But
well, that was part of the reason for having the workshop, is to come up with some of those ideas. Yeah, it's a conundrum.
Yeah, it is. But I wasn't able to stay for the whole workshop last time. I was just there at the beginning, so I missed a lot of the comments. But it doesn't sound like there's resistance from the cities to doing it. If that's right, then
not the ones who were here.
The ones that are here don't appear to be shaking their heads violently, so that's a good sign.
The ones who were here gave wonderful, wonderful reports. Then I think where we are in this workshop or subcommittee or whatever we are at this point, is to have the board members provide whatever feedback and direction we would like to communicate to folks, both the staff and the folks who are here in the audience. Because it is a short 2 months before February 2014, and the end of June is going to come very shortly after that, and we want to be, like I said, as clear as possible in terms of what we are thinking about, you know, how we're going to go about judging the 40% reduction, how we're going to be going about pursuing the longer term objectives that were put out in the permit. Maybe I'll let Jim go ahead.
Well, I've said pretty much.
You should have a number of things.
I've said pretty much everything. I want to see this integrated into the other efforts of the city. I want them looking at what might be more important that they do with the resources they have. Obviously, we were pleased with some of the local governments that had presentations, and both at the State of the Estuary and the workshop, there are some that are doing a good job and that have a sense of assessment methodologies. We want to make sure that everybody has an assessment framework, and that you don't have an assessment framework now that's fundamentally different than what led us to a conclusion that you have trash hotspots, and that you're making progress, and understand it. I might be more understanding if the fiscal challenges have been attempted and they're paramount. Sometimes it takes more than one effort to get over some hurdles, but if they haven't been tried, I'm not going to be very tolerant.
Did you have other comments?
I think at the end of the day, it's going to kind of come down to good faith efforts. And, you know, there is an alternative, obviously, which is the approach that everyone didn't want to go down, which is a list of prescriptive actions. And if this doesn't succeed, if it doesn't appear using quantitative approaches work, then we'll go the prescriptive route, as much as that's less preferred by everyone. So I think our hope is that there are good faith efforts. The results are palpable and real, and palpable is probably not the right word, but it's been a long
time. It's close.
It's close. I think we all can get behind the objective. It's a good objective, and I think we all support it. So hope for the best and not fear for the worst.
Sounds good. All right, I have a few things. I think there's six of them. I'll try to go quickly.
You know,
no, that five was the last list. This is this list.
New list.
My husband gave me a birthday card once that said, "Happy birthday to the maker of lists." And I thought, that pretty well says it all. So just going back to 60,000 feet here for a second, one of my main takeaways from this, the session last month particularly, was that I feel pretty definitely that the deadlines that we put in the permit originally were reasonable then and they're reasonable now. The cities who have come and told us what you're doing have put on a very impressive performance, and I know, you know, I know it's a tough climb, and I know you guys are working really hard to do it, but you're being successful. And there has been, even among the communities that have not always been in the leadership mode, there's been a lot of progress in the last 6 months since the map started being generated. So I'm very optimistic that the progress will accelerate. So that was number one. See, we're already done with number one. Number two, I am just really motivated to stick with the system that we adopted that measures outcomes, which is trash from the cities into the waters of the state, and doesn't require particular BMPs. I really want that to work, and I want it to work because I think it's going to be the best for the cities. And if it solves a water quality problem, then it's good for us too. So I don't want to give up on it yet, even though we've had some not very good experience, let's call it, on the assessment methods and on the outcome monitoring. I think we'll get there. As Board Member Kissinger said, the only alternative we have is to be prescriptive. We could go out there like LA did and say, you've got to just cover the whole terrain with full trash capture devices. And that's an alternative. But we don't want to go there. I would say, however, that in the next permit, it is very likely that if there is a set of underperformers, let's call them, that set of underperformers will probably face many more prescriptive requirements than the set of performers does, because we just can't go indefinitely allowing people a lot of flexibility when they're not going to measure up. With respect to monitoring and the outcome monitoring, the assessments, whatever we're calling it now, as I mentioned before, I think the perfect has been the enemy of the good. And let's just not do that anymore, okay? We don't want to continue to get hung up on precision, because this is not an academic exercise. And the reality is that as we approach 2022, a little trash ought to be pretty visible. So we're not going to have really fancy methods to know whether something is there or it's not. So it gets simpler as time goes on. We are at your disposal if you have questions about what's going to be good enough in this next round. I do want to emphasize that we want to know what your thinking is in February, and we want to have your initial data at the end of June. So I guess that's clear. I was struck by Leslie Estes's, she's from Oakland, her description of the Lake Merritt experience, which kind of came down to, let's just do it. She said, this isn't a science project. We just wanted to go out there and throw everything at it and see what worked and do what we thought was going to be best. And I applaud that. They did, however, have enough basic monitoring to show that between the 2000 to 2005 period and the 2010 to 2013 period, there was a substantial change and a substantial reduction in trash. So that was monitoring. It wasn't, as she said, it wasn't a big science project, but it was enough monitoring that we could figure out that they made an improvement, and that's what we're searching for here. If I can take one extra minute, I'd like to talk about football. How about that Stanford Cardinal team?
They float, you know, past the structure.
If you look at our original permit, we said, okay, you're starting out, it's 2009, we're starting out on your own one-yard line. By 2014, we want you to be at your 40. By 2017, we want you to be at your, effectively 70 yards. No, at the opposite team's 30-yard line.
We had multiple touchdowns. Who knows?
We are not Stanford, all right? By 2022, we want you to be on or approaching the touchdown line or have won multiple games, whatever.
A long game.
But no hit.
And in terms of precision, you know, next June, I'm not going to care whether you're on the 40-yard line. What I want to see is you're somewhere on the field near the 40-yard line. You know, we're not going to have guys out with chains going, you know, marking the little end of the ball and it reached it. Yeah, anyway, if you're on the 35-yard line and you're, excuse me, Bruce, running an Oregon Ducks offense, no huddle offense. You've got the big mo, then you're good to go. So just, you know, don't get hung up. We want you to go forward and use the tools we have available to get the information that we want.
We want everyone to be
above average. We want everyone to be, like, what is it, Lake Wobegon. That's right, where all the children.
Be to you if you're not.
All the children are above average. Okay, moving on. I'm almost done. There is a serious question about what we're going to do about figuring out whether people are in compliance or not in compliance with the 40%. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have this discussion among everybody. We sort of have the outline of a logical framework that we're going to use, I think. And it was presented by our staff, and it's remarkably similar to the one that Save the Bay also presented to us. And that is that there is one number that we can all agree on that we can use, and that's the percentage of the high trash generation areas and or medium ones that are draining to full trash capture devices. And so that's a number that we can use. And so that's number one, that we can start from there. And if there's not very much area that is served by full trash capture devices, then we have to go to steps 2 and 3 in an aggressive way. And if there's a lot that's being treated by full trash capture, then it's kind of less important what else you're doing. Steps 2 and 3 in my book would be, step 2 would be after we look at the percentage that's served by full trash capture, we look at your observations, your assessments, the field data that we've been talking about getting by June 2014. And for some of you, you have a lot of this. You have a lot already, actually. If the situation still isn't clear, then we go to the third tier, which is determine whether the programs or whether your solutions match your problems. That's a less objective measure of what's going on, but at this point, once we get to that level, all we're left with is our staff's competent professional review. And they will do a good job, and at that point we will be looking at the level of effort, and I know our staff has been talking about that a lot. We don't want you to grab something off the shelf or do something that you were already doing. We want to look at what you chose, whether it was appropriate, what the level of effort is that you're putting into it. So I think that's the basic outline of what we're going to be looking at, and I hope that's helpful to you. I hope that you feel like you have at least a little bit more knowledge now than you did 2 months ago about how we're going to do this. My last 2 points I think we covered before in the question period. With respect to the performance standard that we're talking about of full trash capture, it's whatever you do that has equivalent results. It's not some magical formula, and we're not going to be certifying magical formulas that, you know, one of the 627 or whatever. And we do hope that you will continue to consider all the pathways that move trash from your cities into the waterways of the state, because we don't want to have to mess with a whole bunch of other rulemakings to accomplish the same thing. We'd like to just have everybody rowing in this boat in the same direction and try to get there all at once when we want to, which is 2022. I feel like I just sang an aria. Sorry, but this is such a serious issue, and you guys have worked so hard on it and are going to have to continue to work so hard on it that we wanted to give you the benefit of all the thinking that we could and the attention. And hopefully it has been helpful. And do the other board members have closing Terry, comments, or are we done?
Did you just say it's not over till the thin lady sings? Is that what you said?
the thin lady just sang, and it's still not over. I don't know. We're going to have to search something for another analogy.
I think
anyway.
You did a nice summation.
All right. Who gets to go pound the gavel?
You do. You're the vice chair.
All right. This is so much fun. Thank you all.
So the sleep